Welcome to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna.
Got it caught! Touchdown! Oh my gosh! How did that happen? He got it from 59 yards away for the win!
Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, is brought to you by Ticket Exchange, Community First Credit Union, Carey Limousine, Wachovia, Sunny's Barbecue, and by Everbank. Jaguars This Week begins right now.
All right, here we go. Yeah, I almost feel like we should call it labor issues this week, at least
for
the next couple of
months. 18 hours away from a potential
about
lockout?
30. About 30.
Is it that much?
It's 11:59 tomorrow night, so a little less than 30 hours. And depends on where you go to find the information on what you hear. Now, the last thing I read probably an hour ago was that Don Banks was reporting that an unnamed source, because remember, the players and the owners both agreed during federal mediation they wouldn't comment, but someone told him that the talks today went better than expected. Hey, look, I'm hanging my hat on something positive on that one.
Yeah.
But there's just no way to know.
What do you know? How do you know?
Okay, well, you know more than most because you were part of all that stuff in the early
90s. Yeah, but I'm not in that loop anymore. You know, and what's going on behind closed doors right now, I mean, really nobody knows except for the parties that are in that room. And there's a lot of – and it's on a lot of people's minds. I mean, just today, I think every person that I came in contact with asked me, what do you think's going to happen? They all know about it.
Hey, I spoke at the Oceanside Rotary
Club.
They
know what's coming. Could be coming.
I spoke to the Oceanside Rotary Club yesterday, Lux, and every question was labor.
Mm-hmm.
Every single question. It's never been that way, obviously, but that's all it's going to be. That's
no,
what the show
there's
is going to
be. What, labor peace essentially since 93?
18 years, 93.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a long time.
How about the process? Judge David Doty is in the middle of it in that Minneapolis courtroom right now. And here's what's happening right now. And you were a part of it back then, right, when they were talking about free agency and what you helped set this up.
Mm-hmm.
So here's the Doty issue. The league wants Doty out. They think they're biased against him.
Yeah, they've had that view for a while.
For a couple of years. The players obviously want to stay there because in the early 90s there were some rulings that went in their favor from Judge Doty. So here's what it looks like if you haven't been following it. You correct me anytime, Logs. If the players want the case to stay in Judge Doty's court, and they do, they have to decertify before the CBA expires tomorrow night at 11:59.
And I don't know that. I don't know how it would stay in the Doty's. But the way I understand it, I've also been told this, and I don't know if it's the truth or not, that if there is a lockout, the CBA has expired, then it would no longer reside in Judge Doty's courtroom.
Right. But here's the agreement in the CBA, and this was in the Wall Street Journal this morning, that the ownership got the players to agree that if they did not decertify before the extension or before the expiration of the CBA, then they couldn't decertify until September. And so in accordance to get that, they also had to give up the fact that if they decertified before the CBA expired, then it would stay in Judge Doty's court through a new CBA extension. So there was some negotiation. Think about how forward-thinking you have to be to put all that stuff into the agreement when you first write it.
Yeah.
I mean, you're talking about thinking about what would we do, all right, you know, fourth down and inches on the 15-yard line and the 14-yard line in the fourth quarter when you're down by three.
Well, and the owners thought that they were forward-thinking and getting, I guess you could say, lockout insurance from the television deals, and Judge Doty does not rule in the owner's favor.
Another example.
So, you know, I don't know what to make of it. I just really hope that this is a true deadline, because if it's not a true deadline, it's not going to get done. And how is this March 4th, right? March 4th,
March 4th
midnight.
Midnight.
Is that really viewed from both sides as a deadline? If it's not, then it's not going to get done.
Well, there's been some talk.
You have to face a real deadline.
True.
To get the pressure on both sides to get something done.
Well, that's really not a deadline because there's nothing. I mean, Roger Goodell, the commissioner, said that there would be losses. But the deadline, it wouldn't really be until what?
Well, until opening day.
Okay. So then you've got months.
Well, I mean, or until you get close to opening day or the start of training camps, because you got to be able to put your team together.
Right.
You know, and for some organizations that you look at that have had coaching changes, holy cow, they're probably just going, oh, my.
Eight teams.
Yeah. It's a quarter of the league. 25% of the league could
have
no offseason and then get to, at some point, wherever, August, July, who knows, and say, okay, we're having a season, get your stuff together.
Right. And that's
whole difficult.
That is, and that's a whole other issue to grapple with. But let's go back real quick. Again, what we read, there are a couple of different options. One is that the owners could declare an impasse. They'd have to prove it in court. And on an impasse, they could impose their last best offer as the working rules. Not likely to happen. Another option is that the players decertify. Then as a group of individuals and not a union, they can file antitrust lawsuit against the National Football League and in Judge Doty's court and then try to get an injunction against the lockout, which would force the owners to open their doors back up and go about business until something was resolved. And, of course, that's a long process. Lester Munson, who is the legal writer, senior legal writer for ESPN, by the way, has an excellent column laying this all out on ESPN.com. So if when we're done, you're not tired of it already, you want to go read Lester Munson's column. The long and short of it is, it looks like if they go into this lockout mode and courtroom battles, because that's coming, this is going to drag out for some time because these issues will have to be resolved before they can get on with it.
You know, I know that, you know, just from talking to some of the players and the coaches in this building, you know, they're all kind of saying, hey, you know, we understand that we not with, you know, here's the crazy thing. Just an example. You know, a player wants to get is getting married. A coach may not be able to go to that wedding.
Is that true? I mean, I knew they couldn't talk business, but is that...
Well, I mean...
That's like sunshine laws for politicians.
I mean, you know what I mean? I mean, those are the kind of things that, you know, they got to walk around if all of a sudden that this happens. You know, and I know that a lot of players and coaches from teams around the league have been talking about in the event that there is a lockout, hey, here's what we need you to be able to get done, or here's what we want to be able to accomplish.
Didn't David Garrard say as much in a story on Jaguars.com?
David did. I saw Rasheen Mathis here today for a short bit.
Chad Henne obviously was working with the new quarterback coach, Brian Daboll, down in Miami, and that got a wrist slap. All of a sudden now, there's a lot of issues that are coming up. How about the website issue, right? Using the likenesses of players on the website when there's no CBA.
Can't do that.
I mean, all of a sudden it becomes...
It's crazy, you know, and I think, you know, there's a lot of fans that are watching it very closely because I think clearly the NFL has become the nation's pastime.
Oh, yeah. There's no doubt. You know, it's king.
Baseball and basketball, they're not even close. I mean, the NFL is the king of the sports world in America. And there's a lot of fans that are worried that, you know, their favorite sport's not going to be able to be enjoyed. But at the same time, at some point, the fans are going to kind of grow weary of labor issues, collective bargaining. And you don't ever want to get to the point where the fans become disinterested in the process. Because if you get to that point, then you get to the point where what baseball had. I mean, how long was baseball out for, Joe? You followed baseball more than I did.
In 94, they were out.
It was a while.
Yeah, they
missed half a season. But I think if that wouldn't have happened, it might still be on top as far as being popular.
Maybe. But, I mean, think of what baseball lost. I mean.
They lost their number one status.
Yeah, I mean,
and
they lost everything.
If football thinks that can't happen to them.
Oh, it can. Absolutely, it can.
Although that's a precipitous fall for a sport that right now owns it. I mean, their combine ratings last year on a network with 21 million fewer viewers than ESPN did better than any single game of Major League Baseball.
And that's
I mean, the combine, folks. Think about the fantasy football implications. How many people do you know that play fantasy football?
I know a ton.
Dozens.
And I talked to a ton of people this week that
it's
were talking to
industry.
Me about, you know, hey, did you see this at the combine? Did you see his number? And I'm like, I watched a little bit of it. I watched enough. Of the NFL Network's coverage of the combine to see the Jaguars defensive backs coach Corey Unlin putting the DBs through the drills on the field.
Hey.
That's, you know.
You know my brother-in-law because he works in our booth here. He is a knucklehead for fantasy football. The money that he spends on it is off the charts. That's a cottage industry.
Sure it is.
I mean, no one else has it. I mean, rotisserie baseball was it. The NFL steamrolled it. That would be a precipitous fall. That would be a tragedy for these owners and these players to allow their game, their livelihood, and a lot of other people's too now, to take that big of a drop.
Well, and the thing that would, if you do have this lockout, you know, work stoppage, whatever you want to call it, I think the ratings of the draft, obviously ticket sales, advertising campaigns, sponsorships, all of that stuff just kind of gets put on hold. You know, and there are a lot of teams in the league that, really can't afford that, including this
one. Oh, no, there's no doubt. Hey, look, at that Rotary Club yesterday, now one gentleman raised his hand. He said, Brian, he goes, I don't want to be offensive. I've been a season ticket holder since day one. I am going to be very mad, and I will have no sympathy for one side or the other. And the reaction in the room was almost unanimous. Yeah, that's right. You bet. That's right. I said, now look, folks, labor issues are a part of business in this country. If you get to September and there is football, you won't remember what's happened all these months. You'll forget about it because once the games go back on, you'll probably go. If you miss games, though, that's when people said, hold on now.
Now, I don't think you can count in there the ratings for the draft, because I think people are still going to watch it. A lot of people are going to watch it. If people are going to watch it, people are going to sponsor it, because it's going to be the last thing of football, possibly, that you may have for a while.
Well, here's my thing. We can talk. I told Joe earlier, man, you get after the draft now. The summer months on this show.
It could get ugly.
Yeah. We might want to find some best of shows to put on. Because honestly, what are we going to talk about? I mean, we're going to speculate.
Baseball?
Hey. Yeah, oh, dear God.
No, we're not going to do that.
No.
You can have baseball, Joe.
Yeah, with all due respect, Joe, you do it, baby. The NFL has a window, a short window, if they could resolve this by the draft, that they would still, they wouldn't lose a whole lot. I mean, there might be some monetary losses in tickets and interest and things like that, but you get to the draft, and then if you have something to go forward from there, you're okay. But if you get after the draft.
But I mean, the numbers that you would lose from now until the draft of not having labor,
It's big. It's big. It's in the hundreds of millions of dollars, according to the commissioner.
And I think he's right on key. It would cost a ton of money.
Well, you remember what Team Teal did last year. Obviously, they're starting to do it again. I think the worst case scenario for the Jaguars is they couldn't keep building on that momentum, and a lockout will at least extinguish some of it.
Yeah, to put it on hold.
You know, guys like Tony will be out there banging the drums and trying to get things moving again, and they'll keep some fire going, so at least a spark, but it will not be the same as it was last year when they were so successful.
It won't be the same. It won't be.
Because they're
going to
lose the players. Remember, they had players at every one of these events.
You know, the one good thing is that I guess what, John Mara?
Yes. He was in the negotiations.
Co-owner of the New York Giants participated in the negotiations. I really wish that
Dan Rooney
were not over in Ireland and were back here participating in these talks, because he really is very well respected among owner circles. He's very well respected from the player side as well.
He's from a market where labor is a very important component.
And he has been, I think, instrumental. I know that for a fact that he was instrumental in many other past labor issues. And, you know, that's the thing that I think, you know, when we've had Vic Ketchman on here for years, and Vic always talked about League Think. And League Think was kind of the old guard in the National Football League, in that you had them thinking together. What's best for the game? What's best for the Shield? Well, nowadays you have a lot of owners that have had to pay a lot of money for their franchise and want to make sure that they keep the ability to cover that amount. Bob McNair's a perfect example in Houston.
Just their debt service
alone. The debt service is huge. And I think in today's day and age, because you've had a lot of change of ownership in the National Football League in recent time, do you have a lot of that League Think among owners still?
No, you don't.
I think you've lost some of that, and that's why I think not having – you know, the Rooneys and the Maras kind of at the forefront with the owners, it certainly doesn't help. Now, hopefully somebody else can step into that role.
355-NFL, 1-800-355-6351. Facebook.com/JacksonvilleJaguars. Twitter @JagsVoice. Get your thoughts in. Wasn't that riveting radio? Unfortunately, there's more of that to come, ladies and gentlemen. Try and talk some football as well here on Jaguars This Week on News Talk Radio, WOKV. Depend on it. All right, welcome back, Jaguars This Week. Brian Sexton along with Jeff Lagerman. 355-NFL-1 is the phone number. 800, of course, 355-6351 if you're listening on the web or anywhere outside of our calling area. Twitter @JagsVoice will get your thought on. And we've put a thread there on Facebook for questions outside of labor.
Yeah, we'd like to have them.
You know, one or two. You said you were going to watch the combine. I promised you I would not. And mm-hmm. I held my promise. Did you hold yours?
I watched a little bit of it.
And?
Really, to be honest with you, the only part that I watched was the DBs.
Okay. That's an important part for this team.
You know, and to me, it's fun to watch. Because for me, it brings back memories of when I was there, the whole process. But, you know, it's amazing how, you know, when I participated, I didn't view it as, you know, the be-all to end-all to getting into the National Football League.
Right.
You know, but, I mean, to me, the thing that strikes me is looking at some of the numbers that these players are putting up at the combine now. They're just insane.
What you mean in terms of speed?
Speed, strength, height, weight, you know, the vertical jump, the broad jump. And you sit there and you go, my goodness. And how well the big men are moving now compared to what they used to do. It's not even close.
Well, let's start with the big men. How about the guy from Oregon State? I cannot pronounce his last name. Steven is his first name. Bench pressed 225 pounds, a combine record 49 times.
And they're pretty strict about form on that now. I mean, you can't bounce it off the chest and come close to locking out, not lock out. I mean, they're very strict with form.
So just how impressive is that?
It's unbelievable. When I was at the combine, you know, all, you know, 6 foot five or 6'6", 240 pounds, I guess I was at that time. I think I did it 16. I mean, the guy's done it almost nearly 50 times.
Yeah.
I mean, that's insane.
How does that translate?
They got DBs that on the low end are doing what I did at 16 reps of 225.
So we're talking like 22 years of physical development training.
Yeah.
And what they do now is so much different than
what
you did.
It's so more specialized. I mean, in the training techniques are so much more advanced. And probably what's more advanced than anything is the preparation for the combine itself. You know, if the guys are actually training for the tests that they have at the combine, to me, that's the thing that has advanced the most, and even more so now to where they're having training sessions for players for the interview process. I didn't have any of that.
How does that translate, 49 presses of 225? How does that translate for defensive tackle into functional football skill?
Well, it's amazing, Brian. When I was in New York at that time, you remember back when they used to have the NFL Strongest Man competition?
Yeah.
At 1 year, when I was with the New York Jets, we had the first, second, and third place finishers for the NFL Strongest Man. There was Scott Mercereau, a nose tackle, white guy from Connecticut. We had Tim Cofield, a linebacker that you probably know because he played in Kansas City. And he was built like Adonis. And then we had Ken Rose, who was a linebacker who was, you know, 195 pounds, 200 pounds, great special teams player, played also in Philadelphia. And these guys were absolute freaks of nature strong. But it didn't make Tim Cofield any more of a better player. Didn't make Ken Rose a better athlete. You know what I mean?
So it doesn't necessarily mean he's going to be a beast to move.
No. I mean, like with Scott Mercereau, it made him strong at the point, but could he eat up a double team and throw guys around? No.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, it's a certain point where, you know, I think Gene Smith, let me use his term again, about the combine, and he says, hey, look, you know, we rank our guys on game film, and then we tweak our board based on what we see at the combine or just to get confirmation of what we already know. You know, so a lot of those numbers, I mean, for some people, oh, boy, he's going to be super strong. He's a great player. It changes a little bit, the thought process, but not much.
All right, folks, we've reached the bottom of the hour. A little football, a little labor. We'll come back half the show to go, and we've got callers on the line. 800-355-NFL1, Facebook.com/JacksonvilleJaguars, and at Jags Voice on the Twitter thing. News is next here on News Talk Radio, WOKV. Depend on it. Rolling right along here, passing the bottom of the hour, but 23 minutes left in the show. Brian Sexton along with Jeff Loggeman, Joe Fortunato, Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, only on News Talk Radio, WOKV. First phone call of the evening, 800-355-NFL1, 355-NFL1, at Jags Voice with your Twitter thoughts, Facebook.com/JacksonvilleJaguars. where there is a post on the wall that you can comment on with your questions and thoughts. Let's go to Neil, who held through the break at the bottom of the hour. Neil's out at the beach. Hey, Neil.
Hey there. One quick question now. With the money that the players make through endorsements and commercials, and they're under contract with the particular team, for example, Indianapolis with Manning and all, are they sharing any of that money with the owners?
No, they are not. But I will say this, like if Peyton Manning and a group of players do something, then that money is shared with the players overall. Now, if Peyton Manning does a commercial and there is an NFL logo of any kind, the Shield, the Colts, whatever team the player plays for, then that money has to get paid to the NFL to use those likenesses, logos, etc.
But if David Garrard goes and does a commercial for a local car dealer and he wears a blue shirt without any Jaguars logo, and let's say he makes $10,000 for his appearance in that commercial, no.
That's his.
That's his. They do not share that.
Interesting. Okay, thank you.
Yep.
You got it.
You know, and on the flip side of that, you know, a lot of people say, well, why don't the players share that? Well, when the league promotes the league, you know, NFL films, NFL network, ad campaigns. Yeah, they use all the players' likenesses and such.
And they don't get paid for that.
No, they don't.
355-NFL1. Neil, appreciate the call. That, by the way, is a question I was asked a lot the last couple of weeks as I've been out and about.
About the player sharing
with
owners.
Yeah, if the player goes and gets a side deal on his own, does he have to pay that back into the pool? And you can see why people, you know, would want to know the question.
Sure.
Because we're talking about $9 billion and dividing up the pool. Well, why don't they throw everything in the pool? Your explanation makes a lot of sense, though.
Well, trust me. The ability to use Peyton Manning and the ability to use the NFL logo shield.
There's a value in that.
That costs a lot of money.
A lot of money. 355-NFL1. We've got Bill on the south side of town this evening. Bill, welcome to the program.
Yeah, thank you very much. Listen, I thought I heard you say something about maybe having to lay down your Wednesday show if they're not playing, that you don't know what you're talking about and stuff like that.
We were being facetious.
Well, I hope so, because, I mean, I feel you guys are just warming up now, and you only got a few minutes left, you know? I mean, I'm wondering why you're not even, you ought to be between 6 and 8 every Wednesday.
I agree, especially without Kiss It Vic.
Oh, I know it. Listen, let me tell you something. He was at his best on the Wednesday shows, and that was because of you three guys, really, that propped him up.
There's
I
a
hope
dynamic.
He has a written contract up north, you know?
He does, I'm sure.
Anyway, there's any number of things that can be talked about. You know, there's off the wall stuff. I mean, I had a guy over here from Europe, and he's asking me, how do you score this game? He says, how come you get 6 points for that? And how come if you run it in, you get 6 points, and then you're going to go for two? And why don't you get another six? And all this kind of stuff. Why do you kick it here? You get 1 point, and you kick it there, you get 3 points. And I didn't have an answer for him.
That's a good question, though. Because I don't have an answer
for
you, right?
But there are all kinds of stuff to talk about, man.
You'd have to go back way, way, way back to get the information on who in the world came up with the scoring plan.
We may be going that far back if this thing stretches too far into
the summer. We'll have plenty to talk about.
Really?
You think so? Yeah, we'll have plenty to talk about, because as long as this isn't going away, there's always going to be, you know, issues related to this negotiations that we'll be talking about. You know, and there are going to be a lot of personal stories that are going to arise.
Yeah.
There are a lot of players who I'm sure have not taken care of their money.
There's no doubt.
And who are going to have issues with not having certain monies coming their way.
And by the way, the association has been telling players for the better part of the last two seasons to start putting, you know, 25% of their check.
Yeah,
into
but
it.
You know, Brian, that just, you know, that a lot of that fell on deaf ears.
Well, yeah, I know. I'm just saying that it's not like they didn't try to tell them and warn them.
You know, NFL players aren't the smartest group. They're not the dumbest group either. I mean, there's a lot of them that are very bright, but there's a lot of them that aren't, and they're not real savvy with money.
They're also very young men, and young men with money.
Well,
hey, I was a young man without money, and I found a way to screw it up.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that you know, kind of get on them about that. But, I mean, think about it, folks. I mean, if you were 21 or 22 and had some money in your pocket, did you make the best decisions at that age? No, you had to take your lumps. Unfortunately, the lumps that most people took, they weren't dealing with that kind of money.
No, and some of these players don't come from a background where they had a real support system that taught them about money. You know, there have been some players who've come through here who come from backgrounds with nothing, and then you give them money. And I'm thinking of one player in particular, they got a big check, and they blew it on clothes and cars and jewelry.
Meaningless stuff.
And you saw it, and you went, oh, my God.
Good for
don't
the economy.
It's great for the local economy. That's a whole other issue. How will the local economy deal with it? So, Joe, who's on the line now? Or you've got a Facebook question.
Got something from Craig over in Sydney, Australia.
Hello,
I know
Craig.
A town you like a lot.
Love
and
Sydney.
His
if you've
question,
never been, it is an outstanding
you've
trip.
You've spoken highly.
Very
I know
highly.
That. All right, Craig wants to know, how much improvement can we expect out of Zach Miller this year?
I think we can expect a ton out of Zach, and mainly because availability.
True.
You know, he didn't even have an entire offseason, didn't really have a training camp in 2010. And I remember talking to some of the offensive coaches about getting him involved. And I think it was Dirk Cutter that told me, he said, it's hard to get somebody involved if you're not confident that he's going to be available. You know, so you don't really come up with plays not knowing whether this player is going to even play.
And he was, with the foot all off season?
It was all off season. He didn't do anything in the OTAs. I think he tried and then aggravated it. And then in training camp, it was up and down. And they were worried about him kind of re-injuring, and that was a pretty serious injury that he had. But his biggest thing is boy, if he can participate in the OTAs, if there's OTAs, there's another thing, then you get that confidence with the coach in the player's ability and his availability, and then all of a sudden he can really, really grow, because there's no questioning that this guy is a talent. And to me, a Dallas Clark type talent. I'm not saying he is Dallas Clark,
the 52
but
yard,
he has that ability.
The 52-yard touchdown here against the Texans, if you remember, in the fourth quarter that gave the Jaguars the lead, you know, where he caught him on the sideline and then darted inside a defender. I mean, that stop and then sudden acceleration, that's rare.
Good player.
For a 250-pound guy.
Real good player.
Also, a follow-up question before we go to break. How is Aaron Kampman progressing with his injury? Anybody know?
And, folks, if you haven't been to Jaguars.com, go to Jaguars.com and watch a sit-down interview that I did with the Rushmen coach,
Joe Cullen.
And he talked specifically about Aaron Kampman and how he's doing in his rehabilitation process, among other things. Also, there is an interview with defensive coordinator Mel Tucker. And then soon to be up at Jaguars.com will be one with defensive backs coach Corey Unlin, in which he was very honest, and I appreciated his honesty. And then also offensive line coach Andy Heck, and we actually reminisced a little bit.
Because you faced one another.
We actually did, and we grew up in the same area and came out in the same draft where I was the 14th pick overall, and he was the 15th pick overall back in 1989.
Wow. Well, I'm looking forward to that. Jaguars.com.
Yeah.
You're sitting down with some folks in the office.
Yes. Yeah, we got a little thing going on at Jaguars.com.
All right. So check it out, folks. Let's take a break. We will come back. We've got callers on the line. We've got thoughts on Facebook and on Twitter. Jaguars this week. One segment left in this riveting show this evening. We'll try to talk football during it here on News Talk Radio, WOKV. Depend on it. All right, probably 8 minutes left in the program here. Brian Sexton, Jeff Loggeman, Joe Fortunato with you. Jaguars this week rolling through. We'll keep going. We'll keep going. Labor or not, we will keep on
rolling.
We will
labor on.
Yes. Joe, that sounds like a promo. We've got Chin on the south side. Hey, Chin, how are you tonight?
Good. How are you?
Good.
Enjoy it. Love your guys' show. I had a couple of questions about, actually two questions about concerning the combine. One was, why is it that I love watching the combine, but why is it that they don't do any of the drills or anything like that in pads? As a coach or an owner watching it, I would think you would get a better feel of the player if, you know, they were doing the 40 or if they were throwing or catching in pads. And the second part of this question is some of the things that they make them do as far as the broad jump and things like that, how does that even translate into the game, and what does that actually gauge as a player? And right. I'll take your answer off offline. Thank you.
Thanks for holding.
All right, Chin, the second part, I believe there's two parts, right?
Yes.
Okay, the second part to the question was why would they do broad jump, you know, and I'm sure the same would apply to vertical jump and things of that nature when it doesn't apply to certain players. The biggest thing is it's an explosive movement, and it's hard to measure quick twitch muscles. Quick twitch muscles are, I mean, phenomenal and can make a player that much better, and that really, I think, shows a player's quick twitch or explosive movements. And to me, it's very telling.
Do you remember Dave Thomas? Obviously, you remember him, but they had those high boxes, those high wooden boxes.
Unbelievable.
There was one, literally, it was like up to my chin. I mean, the thing was 5 feet to the top of it.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so not up to my chin, but really high. And Dave could flat-footed jump to the top of the box and stand on it.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's rare that human beings can do that, but there are some players at the combine, based on what I've read, that have been able to do the exact same thing. So what you're showing is a rare athlete.
Yep, and to me, that's what that is all about, quick twitch, explosive movement. Now, why don't the players wear pads? The combine is not about evaluating football so much, because you've done that with college film. I mean, for hours and hours and hours as a scout. But if everybody is wearing the same uniform, which is clothes, you know, gym shorts and Under Armour, I guess, is what they're all wearing now.
Yeah.
It's all relative. You know, you're comparing this guy's numbers to that guy's numbers and kind of where it all ranks. So as long as everybody's doing the same thing in the same clothes, it's okay. But football stuff, you're evaluating that on film. And if you're not, you're the Philadelphia Eagles drafting that Mike Mamula.
Yeah, just off the numbers all those years ago.
Yeah, and you're not going to do that. Sorry, Joe, I had to bring that up.
They've got a history of drafting well, so you can do that.
This newer in particular
has really knocked it out of the park.
But, I mean, you know, you can't ask players to put on pads and run around. I mean, they're still going to run around well. You know, you've evaluated them and evaluated them and evaluated them in pads, and this is an opportunity to see them, you know, in shorts and to see how the legs move, to see how the feet placement is, and a lot of times pads will get in the way of that. Yeah. It's all about relative numbers.
Got a question from Field the Teal on Twitter, at Jags Voice. Did you or Jeff check out the quarterbacks at the Combine? I did not watch 1 minute of the Combine.
Yeah, I did not. I just read a lot of the reports that came from the Combine. You know, and to be honest with you, how much can you really put into the quarterbacks at the Combine? It's so hard because they're not in a familiar system. They're not throwing the ball to familiar receivers. So, to me, I think the throwing portion at the combine for the quarterbacks, as far as accuracy and timing, is not what it's all about.
Right.
It's about evaluating throwing motion, arm strength. And as numerous general managers will tell you, it's about meeting players and talking to players and seeing how they act in a coaching environment.
You know, along those lines, Orion Mallett, Jake Locker, and Andy Dalton, Christian Ponder. I mean, these guys, they're going to come in, and it's tough to evaluate them because they're all going to have, as you said, in that general system, be able to throw. I think this is about Cam Newton, Tim Tebow, you know, those guys who are being projected as, you know, do they change their mechanism as Tim did a year ago? Can they play, you know, dropping back from center, which is the question on Cam Newton, who almost never was under center, and made one read and then would run with it in the Auburn system. For those atypical or non-prototypical quarterbacks, that's what you would watch to evaluate.
Yeah, and, you know, it's amazing when like, today I sat down, as I promoted him a few minutes ago, I sat down with defensive backs coach Corey Unland, who actually was running some of the drills with the defensive backs. And I asked him about, you know, you're having meetings with the players and you're talking to the players. And I said that you probably get more from running a drill about learning about a player in that type of situation as opposed to a formal sit-down interview. And he said, you're right on the money, because, you know, you want to see how the player takes coaching, how he acts among other players. Does he take direction? Does he listen? I mean, all of those things that, you know, are evaluated only from a coach's standpoint are so valuable as opposed to the numbers.
All right, how about some meat here? Ryan Mallett, was awful in front of the media, and he was great on the field, at least from what I've read. Mm-hmm. I did watch his interview, though. Cam Newton was sensational and then disappointing to people who thought that he was going to come in and light it all up.
Mm-hmm.
What would you rather have?
To me, I don't know. I'm not so sure that a Cam Newton is going to be able to transfer his game, you know, to the NFL style.
He's certainly not going to be able to run like he did.
And when I read his quote about an icon, you know, something of that nature.
To his credit, though, he apologized for it. He explained himself and he apologized for it.
Thank you, Cam.
Yeah.
I'd take Cam Newton over the guy at Arkansas strictly because there's so many things being said about the quarterback from Arkansas, Ryan Mallett, that are negative from a personality standpoint. You can't have a quarterback that has a bad personality. You just can't have it. It'll never work. And I don't care how good he is. Jeff George, perfect example. One of the most talented players, arm strength-wise and throwing-wise, to ever play in the National Football League. Terrible guy, me-first guy, and never won. But he had the best arm in the National Football League, maybe, that I've ever seen. But he was a bad guy.
Well, I mean, it looks right now like, and again, never say never, but it looks like you've got Blaine Gabbert, the kid from Missouri, Cam Newton, obviously, and Mallett, who will probably come off the board in the first 15 picks. And, again, never say never, because, last year Alualu was on no one's radar screen, so you don't know that they wouldn't take a stab at a Jake Locker or a Christian Ponder or an Andy Dalton, but, boy, it sure looks like the Jaguars are going to be looking in the second round and down for their quarterback.
Maybe.
But you don't know how it rolls.
Boy, did we think that they were going to draft Tyson Alualu last year?
No, that's why I say you just never know.
You just don't know.
And they are sending out smoke signals all over the place. Every team, all the time. No one knew.
And, Brian, if we don't have a labor agreement, how much more importance does that put on the draft? Because that may be the only way you can improve your team.
Absolutely. It's huge.
In the near future.
All right. Well, here we go. Now 29 hours from a pending lockout in the National Football League. Loggy, thanks. Appreciate it. Have a good week. Joe, nice to see you tonight. Thanks for joining us, everybody, on Jaguars This Week on News Talk Radio WOKV.